You are listening to National Security Law Today.
I'm Melissa Poteet, and welcome to National Security Law Today, the podcast of the ABA Standing Committee on Law and National Security. Last week, the Supreme Court heard argument in the ByteDance case, and we had previously talked to friend of the cast, former general counsel of the National Security Agency, Glenn Gerstel. Every time I talk to Glenn, there's some other huge development that follows every single conversation. We've now heard the argument, and I thought it would be a great time to get his impressions. Glenn, thank you.
Thanks. Absolutely delighted to be here. And you're right. There's lots of aspects to this fascinating case.
So before we get into the argument itself, which we can talk about was interesting on levels, and at least in my opinion, I haven't seen in years in a case before the Supreme Court. But let's talk about what law was challenged here, what wasn't challenged in terms of any EO, just to reorient listeners. And then if you didn't hear Glenn's prior podcasts, we will certainly hyperlink those so you can get more background than we're able to go into tonight.
In essence, this was a direct challenge to the constitutionality of a statute passed by Congress last March called the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act. It was passed last March, signed into law by President Biden in April, and it basically gave ByteDance, which is the corporate owner of TikTok, 9 months to either divest itself of its ownership in TikTok or TikTok would, in effect, be banned in the United States. We can talk about the mechanisms of that exactly, but basically put TikTok on a short leash to find a new buyer. TikTok resisted that. They immediately filed suit in the District of Columbia in federal court seeking to overturn the statute, saying that it was illegal on a number of grounds, most significantly that it curtailed the First Amendment rights of TikTok and its users. A companion case was filed by a number of users on TikTok, creators, so to speak. And those cases wound up in the Supreme Court. But along the way, TikTok was turned down by the district court in the District of Columbia, which said, no, the statute is not unconstitutional. It represents a balancing of the interests of the First Amendment and national security. And in this case, the government does have the right to infringe somewhat on the First Amendment rights of TikTok. The Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit in a three-judge panel unanimously upheld the lower court decision. So TikTok was entering the Supreme Court with the deck stacked against it, so to speak, in the sense that there was two court cases against it that were quite well argued and quite well reasoned. You may disagree with them, but they were on pretty solid ground. So that was the posture as of now. And I might add that the law requiring divestiture or banning goes into effect on the morning of January 19th, interestingly, just a day before Inauguration Day. And so that itself is another interesting aspect of this, given what President Trump has said about it.
Yeah, and let's just clarify, because a lot of things have been attributed to President Trump. And I think what he's actually says, that's something we're going to look at very closely, I think, was his last missive on that, if I recall. Is that what you remember?
Yeah, well, you know, going back, of course, in 2019, he tried to ban TikTok through executive order. That was challenged in court. That didn't go ahead. And then various points, he said he was opposed to TikTok. More recently, during the last presidential campaign, the most recent one, he's found that TikTok was a great platform for him. And I might also add, for President Biden, too, his campaign used TikTok. I think the Trump found that TikTok was sort of useful to him politically, and he's made a number of announcements that he wants to find a solution. He didn't think banning it was a good idea. We'll see what he actually does, if anything, on the morning of January 20th. But at least the day before, unless the Supreme Court does something in favor of TikTok, that ban will kick into place.
Let's just unpack what were some of the core facts that were in this case and facts that at least Noel, who was arguing on behalf of ByteDance, tended to say weren't settled. Usually cases don't go before the Supreme Court when there are still facts that need to be sort of worked out. So the ByteDance is incorporated in one of the islands, I don't know which, but not in the United States. And in 2023, Glenn, you can correct me here if I'm wrong, the Chinese government indicated that it would, quote, never allow ByteDance to lose or divest itself of TikTok. And so the Chinese government made a public statement saying that it was not going to allow ByteDance to release from its holdings TikTok, which is a U.S. incorporated entity.
You're right. what China said is that the algorithm that ByteDance owns and employs in TikTok around the world was subject to, in effect, export controls, just the same way the U.S. has export controls on sensitive technology. China said the same thing. We're not going to allow the export of this to anybody we don't approve of. And right now, it's in the hands of ByteDance. TikTok, as you correctly stated, is itself a California company. It's owned and controlled by ByteDance, which is itself basically controlled by a Chinese national who happens to live in Singapore. Also, to set the stage, TikTok is used by about 2 billion people around the United States, of whom about 170 million are in the United States. Interestingly enough, it's not allowed in China itself. A variant, a much tamer, more censored version of it is allowed in China, but there's 2 billion users around the world.
Okay, and let's just amplify. So I believe they did also say, though, Glenn, because it's attributed to them, and I don't have a basis to dispute this, that a representative from some part of the Chinese government said that they would not allow the divestiture. They didn't, in that particular public statement.
I'm sure that's the case.
Link it to the algorithm. So that's one. Yeah. Two, with respect to the core algorithm, which is the basis for the, you know, it's a secret sauce, right, for TikTok. TikTok doesn't actually control that. And that came out in the record. That is controlled by ByteDance. And ByteDance has agreed to censor content in China, at least. But it has agreed to do the bidding of the Chinese government and may be legally obligated to do so inside the PRC anyway by law. I mean, I think they did say that, number one. And number two, the company controls the algorithm. The company is controlled by China. It was sort of the feature of the argument. So if China controls the company and controls the algorithm, and TikTok does not control the algorithm, which directs how content will be posted, how it's amplified, whether or not it's even viewed, that effectively TikTok is controlled by the Chinese government by turns. And then why don't we talk a little bit about, I felt bad for Noel Francisco. Yeah. So, I mean, I felt bad for the guy on some level, but what was their argument? Because let's just make clear that in order to get whatever lower level of scrutiny or higher level of scrutiny, strict scrutiny, as opposed to whatever it is reasonable, you would have to assert credibly that the law at issue was not content neutral. And so what did he say along those lines in an effort to escalate what would make a higher level of review that might make it more difficult for the court to uphold the law?
So first, to take a step back, I think this was a case, as is occasionally the case in Supreme Court oral arguments, where a former Solicitor General is facing off with the current Solicitor General. That was the current one, Elizabeth Preligar, versus Noel Francisco, who had been the Solicitor General in the Trump administration. And I think, to be fair, both did a really good job. Both are very, very effective advocates. And were quick on their feet with good, solid answers back to the questions. But having said that, I definitely think that Mr. Francisco, on behalf of TikTok, got right out of the starting gate hit with some very tough questions. And I would say a generally skeptical court. There were very few, in fact, really no justices who were directly supportive of his argument, and several rather skeptical and critical. And you probably would not say that same thing about the Solicitor General's response later on, who seemed to get some questions too, as of course you would expect, but the questions weren't as skeptical and more seemed about figuring out the contours of a possible opinion the Supreme Court might write, whereas in the case of Mr. Francisco, they were sort of questioning the entire premise and foundation of his argument. And the essence of it is that, as you correctly stated, in order for the government to allow or to be permitted to make an infringement on First Amendment speech, there has to be a showing, whether it's a rational showing or an intermediate showing or strict scrutiny showing, but at some level, a standard of varying levels of toughness, that in the case of strict scrutiny, that there's a compelling government interest in curtailing the speech, and that the particular solution that Congress has chosen or the regulations have chosen, as the case may be, is narrowly tailored to achieve that particular purpose and isn't overbroad. It would have been nice from TikTok's point of view if they could have skipped over the first part of that and got to the second, which is the heart of their case, which is to say some version of, look, Your Honor, We concede that there's a national security interest. We're not arguing about that because they couldn't possibly do that. But really, we don't think there's any showing here that the government has made that it proves that it's entitled to engage in this infringement because the evidence here is so skimpy. The government has admitted that China has never influenced TikTok's operations. It has the potential, maybe, but they haven't done. This is TikTok's argument. But yeah, there's no showing. The government concedes that it's all potential. The government also concedes that there's no sign that China has siphoned off user data. Again, another legitimate concern. So TikTok didn't really get to the point which I thought they were strongest at, which is telling the government you haven't made your case. You got good points, but you haven't really made the case. Instead, TikTok's argument got stuck on a bunch of broader questions, which is some version of, and interestingly, all the justices, both liberal and conservative, this did not split neatly down the lines.
No, it sure didn't.
We're skeptical and saying, well, wait a minute, the statute isn't even content-based. There's no content. We're not regulating any content. We're not saying what TikTok can say or can't say. We're just affecting the corporate structure. And we're just saying that TikTok can say whatever it wants. And if it's owned by someone else, that's fine. We're not imposing any content restrictions. I don't think TikTok was ever really able effectively, and I'm not faulting Mr. Francisco, who did a superb job. It's just the nature of the argument. I don't think they were ever really able to convince at least five of the judges that this statute is indeed content-based. I'll explain why in a second. And that therefore it's either an impermissible infringement or it's an infringement that must meet a very, very high standard, and it fails to meet that standard.
There's one point that you made. I want to jump back and I want to say that was disputed. And that is the idea that China manipulating the data was hypothetical. Now, that is the position that TikTok took.
I was stating TikTok's argument, but
I think it might be important to also add right here that Elizabeth Prelogar immediately said they've already done it. And one of the interesting things that she also did was, and Kavanaugh hit on, I can give you some of the quotes too, because I've got the transcript in front of me, and it was, to your point, absolutely spectacular, the lack of division. They have been interested in collecting data on Americans forever, and they do intend, they're not collecting it for no purpose. And she cited, Prelogar cited to the OPM hack and their efforts.
I thought her argument was terrific because it pounded on the national security risk. And it was sort of hard to argue with that because even TikTok was forced to admit that, yes, there is a legitimate national security interest here. But much of that conversation was with the Solicitor General talking about how ByteDance has, in other contexts, manipulated content, again, not on TikTok. And so I'm sure TikTok was frustrated. Again, I'm not taking their position. I'm just explaining what was going on. I'm sure TikTok was frustrated with that line of argument that they weren't able to really rebut that.
To your point, I think it's kind of interesting to look at some of the things that the justices said. Now, Justice Alito is a conservative justice. He is the former U.S. attorney for New Jersey at some point in his career. He's dealt with terrorism cases in the past. He ruffles a lot of people's feathers and mine often. But this is what he said. He's asking Francisco, what if it was just about preventing what Congress viewed as an enormously powerful popular application from gathering an arsenal of information about American citizens? And he posed that question, and there really wasn't a significant comeback. There was an effort by Francisco to reframe the issue. I have to say, Amy Comey Barrett, another one that is, she's been painted, and certainly it did look interesting during her confirmation process. She was characterized as sort of somebody who had inhabited a Handmaid's Tale world. And yet I found some of her questions, and not just in this case, but in other cases recently, to be some of the most discerning in terms of how the digital space actually works in the national security threats, evincing really deep sort of understanding of how the digital world functions. I don't know if you had that reaction too, but they kept reframing the issue in terms of data collection. And boy, you know, Francisco gave the best effort I think anybody could with the facts he had.
On the facts, it's clear that TikTok vacuums up a lot of data. One might argue that all social media does in one form or another. Maybe TikTok is the worst, maybe not. But he kept struggling with the restriction on content point. And again, the justices kept steering him off and saying, well, isn't this just corporate structure? We're not really addressing content. I think his strongest point, which I don't think really landed as well as it might have, is the government concedes that the purpose of this statute is to prevent covert Chinese manipulation of content. And so that very fact means that this is content-based. This is a restriction on content. And I don't think they really convinced the justices that this was truly a case about content restriction. Instead, it sort of printed out as this is a case about Congress trying to prevent national security risks and Chinese ownership and data being siphoned off. But I don't think the conversation got too deep into the actual First Amendment content restrictions. And of course, one of the points that they didn't really get into is the fact that, you know, we really don't have a direct and deep explanation by the Supreme Court of how the First Amendment is to apply to social media apps. We have a pretty good idea of how the First Amendment applies to old-fashioned publications like books and newspapers. But here, the platform itself is part of content. I mean, there's a reason people choose to be on X or not on X, because you like the way it curates information that's fed to you. The same with Instagram or TikTok, for that matter. So the editorial discretion piece of this, which is the content, which is part and parcel of the platform, makes it very hard to say, oh, we're not telling you what you can and can't say. We're just regulating the platform. And they didn't really get too deep into that. And I think this case may afford an opportunity for the court to do so. Maybe they'll sidestep it. We could also talk about what might happen. But I think that's an interesting thing that they didn't really get too deep into. And that's the underlying issue here.
Yeah, I think they didn't get too deep in it. I think this was the first time there was some discussion. And I think that was around, if you've got the transcript, and we'll hyperlink to it, I think it began and, you know, around page 70, where they were talking a little bit about paradigmatically how different these platforms are in terms of the access and presentation of information. And to your point, with a newspaper, you know, when you read an article, if there's some sort of legally mandated disclosure, what the source of that information is. But you're barraged by TikTok all the time. And the way the platform dispenses information to you, the amount of information, the tenor, tone, the background, you can't possibly, with these less than 90 second videos, engage in the kind of analysis that you could if you were looking at a newspaper article, book, or even linear television. And I think that's a very good point. Now, I do think they dipped their toe in the water here, as you said, but I think they stuck, they hewed to what the issue was in this case, and they kept bringing it back to the corporate structure and away from the content.
What I think is interesting, and if we can just spend 10 seconds on it, is what might happen, because the justices now have just a handful of days now from the time we're recording this to just 7 days before the statute runs out. Are they really going to write a substantive, deeply thoughtful opinion on the intersection of the First Amendment and national security in a way that makes them comfortable that they're not laying down a bad precedent? That's a really tall order. I'm not saying they can't do it, but that's a very significant task.
Unless they've actually already started writing it long before.
Yes, even so, but I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just simply saying that they're going to want to be very careful in this area if they get into a deeply substantive analysis of the intersection of the First Amendment and national security. That's going to be something they want to be very careful about. Maybe they can't do that in a handful of days, including if it's negative for the government and in favor of TikTok, that I think would take even longer time to write. It wouldn't surprise me, and Justice Kavanaugh had an interesting colloquy there, about whether they might issue an administrative stay as opposed to an injunction. There's a slight difference there, but they might try to buy some more time to either allow a more thoughtful decision to come out several months later, or as a political reality, either kick the matter back down to the district court or just simply issue an administrative stay, which would have the political effect of allowing President Trump and Congress to take another whack at this should they choose to do so. That would have, from the court's advantage, the option that they won't be the court that's taking away this app from 170 million people and maybe enhancing the legitimacy of the decision by having Congress deal with this problem. We'll see. But this is a very, very complicated case, and the outcome is by no means clear.
What do you think our listeners should be paying attention to in the next few weeks that would have an impact on this case? And let me just say, you keep mentioning what the president's going to do. This was a challenge to a law passed by Congress. But it's also a law passed by Congress following findings regarding national security concerns. They made certain findings on their own. And there is the pre-existing executive order that regards the bulk transfer of United States persons' data to countries of concern. And the two things are inextricably intertwined. What this would pertain to is, you know, sensitive data of U.S. persons being passed back to potentially the PRC. All data collected by all platforms is in general sold to data aggregators. And that is why they are so-called free, is that then you are the subject of targeted advertising, supposedly anonymously. I assume TikTok does that, but it also could and does and has been, I guess, caught a couple of times sharing the data back with the PRC, which would be among the listed countries in the executive order that was a country of concern. Now, one of the things, too, is what she said at the very end was, we're talking about Elizabeth Prelogar here, the SG. Congress just wants to cut the PRC out of the equation altogether. And all of the same speech could continue to happen on the platform. It's like patching up a backdoor vulnerability that the PRC has that we can't totally see around all the corners to imagine how we could use it against our interests. But we know the PRC will do whatever it can to try. And now, but whatever they decide, I mean, I wonder what portion of Srinivasan's DC Circuit's opinion is at all vulnerable. Any of it, Glenn?
Well, I think the DC Circuit Court determination that there is indeed a First Amendment issue here and that arguably strict scrutiny should be the appropriate test. I think that probably is likely to be supported by the Supreme Court. I didn't see any evidence that they were backing off those conclusions. On the question of, okay, well, if that's the standard, does this meet that standard? Which again is where I think TikTok wanted the argument to go. I'm not sure it's going to get there. We'll see what the court does. It's, as I said, it's possible they may make a decision before the 19th. Certainly, if they rule in favor of the government, that's the end of it. There's nothing further. I mean, I guess it's theoretically possible that President Trump could seek to revive the matter by issuing an extension in accordance with the terms of the statute. That'd be stretching the terms of the statute that allow an extension. So if the app goes dark for a day, maybe he could theoretically revive it. All very, very questionable. The statute says you can grant a 90-day extension if there's a deal on the table. There is no deal on the table. So I don't know how that's going to happen. And we're going to have to see. Of course, a final comment is, even if the statute does go into effect, the ban's in effect, and the Supreme Court allows it to go into effect, it's still going to be possible, under the terms of the statute, for Americans to access TikTok. The statute does not operate on individuals. Individuals, if they want to access TikTok through a VPN or some other legal means, and they're allowed to do so, are perfectly free to do so. The statute does not preclude that. Which TikTok argues is one of the holes in the thing. That's that you have an imperfect solution from TikTok's point of view. But I just wanted to say the statute is aimed at app stores and ISPs, not at individual users.
Well, and I would say people determined to find things on the internet always do. Yep. So anyway, yep. Thank you.
All right.
I appreciate talking to you. I'm sure we'll confer on this again in the very near future. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Let's stay tuned to the Supreme Court docket, and we may have an answer to the TikTok question.
All right. Well, our guest tonight has been Glenn Gerstel, who now he is at CSIS, where he's doing huge thinking, but he was also the general counsel of NSA and has thought about this stuff a lot more than most people ever will. Make sure you share this episode with a friend or colleague and discuss the issues we've presented in a thoughtful way. Please, if you like this podcast, make sure you review it on your listening app of choice and subscribe. Hit that subscribe button so you're not missing any of our very substantive content. If you want to, you can reach out to us via X or ABA NatSec, or you can email us at nationalsecurity@americanbar.org. Our writer and producer is me, Elisa Poteet, though I am always here in my individual capacity. Our editor and my co-producer is Francis Burkham. My other co-producer is the amazing, always amazing, Holly McMahon, as well as the incredible members of the Standing Committee on Law and National Security, without whom this podcast would not be possible. We'll see you next time with more on TikTok.
The views expressed on National Security Law Today have not been approved by the House of Delegates or the Board of Governors of the American Bar Association, and this recording should not be construed as representing ABA policy.